All right, this is our final technical session of Channel 9 Live at Build 2014, and how better to end it with Mads and Dustin. You guys did great in your talk today on the future of C-sharp and your team on the work that you've done with Roslyn, VB, and C-sharp. So first of all, congratulations for the open source movement that you're making. And
thanks.
The first thing I'd like to ask you is, what sort of traction has the Roslyn compiler framework been getting? Downloads, forks, whatever.
So when I looked this afternoon, there were something like 133,000 page views, thousands of visits, around 35 forks already. So things are really just took off. On the language design side, there was also some other stuff that went up.
Yeah, I mean, there's been several comments. I think we are up to about 40 comments on the C-sharp language design forum and so on. People are really thinking about the language design we showed as well and giving feedback on it.
It's excellent. Great. Yeah. I mean, it's also an excellent learning tool for people who want to know how programming languages work.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
yes.
I suppose.
Yeah. Lexers, parsers, you know.
There's a lot of code there.
Yeah, nothing better than reading a couple million lines of code.
Hey, who doesn't like to read a couple million lines of code, man?
Yeah.
There are people out there that really like that.
So let's talk a little bit. The commenting, one comment we had gotten was that there didn't seem to be a lot of comments in the code. And I know you guys must have put some interesting comments in there. What happened there?
We actually didn't remove any really comments all that much. We didn't
really
scrub them. Yeah, we scrubbed them for, you know, various things. But we were just actually really terrible at commenting the code. truth.
Right on.
Certain guys are really good at, take a little bit more effort to do that than others. And so you'll find them in some files, you'll find all sorts of things, and in other files, it's just like, how does this work?
Yeah, nice. Class A.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right, so.
It's just reality.
Ahmed wants to know, how long did it take
my friend
to add C-sharp feature for declaring inline variables for the out parameter as demonstrated this morning? i.e. in32.tryParse1234outVarX. This is seriously a big win. Small thing, but takes the pain away.
It is. It looks like a small thing. It was a lot of work for a feature in our new compiler, but it was one guy who did it.
In a sprint, I think he did.
In a sprint, like in 3 weeks. That's sort of, that's one of the bigger features. It's taken one guy 3 weeks. That's one of the advantages of the Roslyn code base is that it is very easy to add new things to it.
Now,
what was great about that was the IDE support was mostly already there. Things just kind of worked. In the past, a lot of the cost of doing new language features, not just on the compiler, but it's also on making sure that it works across all of the IDE and IntelliSense works and all that. We had to do a few things, make sure var shows up, you know, after out and things like that.
Sure.
But for the most part, it was there. And that's been a really big part of making it easier to add language features.
That's actually a really interesting point, because the IDE is really sort of like a garden of compilers, right? You have the IntelliSense, which is a compiler, right? It has a database that it's storing and pulling information from. Well, isn't that how that works?
No, actually, it just calls the Roslyn public APIs today.
It's just one compiler for each
language.
Are
you serious?
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't. That whole business with incrementally trying to predict what people will write and all that, having a separate compiler stuff, it's gone.
Yeah.
It just calls into the compiler code base. It's one code base. Every feature, the semantics of every feature is represented in the code only once.
Amazing.
So we don't mess it up by having, you know, little disparities and things like that.
Perfect. And that speaks exactly to what you were just talking about.
Yep.
When I add a new language feature, IntelliSense knows.
Well, and when you add a language feature, now there's a little bit of an extra sort of step in that you've got to make sure your public API works on it. Right, and if the public API works, you know, there's a set of APIs called lookup symbols, which, in a tree given a position, tell me all the symbols that the compiler would consider here. We use that to drive IntelliSense. So if you go and update that API with your new feature, stuff works.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Really, really awesome. Adam wants to know, any chance of seeing the monadic null checking operator ?? In a future CTP or release of C# vNext?
Yes, there's a good chance of that. A very good chance. It may not be as monadic as you would like.
Could you explain what that means?
What that means anyway?
Yeah, what is a monadic null checking operator?
So, I will not try to explain what a monadic null checking operator is, but I will try to explain what a null checking operator is really quickly.
Okay.
So if you have, say, x question mark dot y, what that means is check if x is null. And if it is, then the whole thing is null. But otherwise, look up x dot y, and that's the result.
Okay.
And that's just a handy little operator for doing null checking in a single expression rather than, you know, in a more convoluted way that we are planning to add. We still have a few nickels about how monadic it should be that we want to figure out, but I think it's fair to expect that to be in a later CDP or at least in the release. That's at least what we're planning for.
Excellent. But, well, it's the first time we saw the word monad in the past 3 days, so thank you, man.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So
even for that.
Great, right on, man. Monad.
Yes.
So do you think Roslyn will affect support forums? I can see it being a nightmare when you need to know which Roslyn extensions a person has installed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Actually, because the problem of extensions has been a problem all the way through, right? Always a problem with support, trying to figure out, well, okay, is that a bug in us or is that a bug in something else? And so that's just kind of standard support.
Maybe there
problem.
Should be a disable all button that people
there
can
there is.
Use
there's actually a... So if you do have trouble with extensions, there is a devenv.exe/safe mode that you can execute at the command line, and that'll pull up Visual Studio without any extensions loaded.
You
can see if it still repos. If it doesn't repro, then...
Excellent. Blame
the extensions.
One
of the
extensions.
So because it's so easy to add language features now, I foresee in the crystal ball many, many language features cometh
Renaissance.
In the next 6 months.
You're smart.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So what are you going to do?
There will be hundreds of language features, and only a few of those will be ones that we built. And the rest will be in all of these forks that people have been making because they want to have fun implementing new language features in a context where they can get, you know, in a full language context and where they can get almost automatic IDE support and so on. So there'll be hundreds of people playing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And... there will be situations where we'll have to deal with, like, do we want to take some of this back into the language? I think one of the things that people appreciate a lot about C# and VB is that we do have a centralized, kind of very conservative approach to how we add language features. And we will try to keep that, because it's part of why millions of people trust in us.
Sure.
So we won't let the language kind of just grow thick with little features that come in from all over the place, but we will definitely take it as another source of inspiration and an opportunity to experiment at a whole nother way before we make a decision.
Right.
Like, rather than just designing a feature on paper like we've done in the past, we have the opportunity to much more easily experiment now, and we can also use other people's implementations to see how does that work out in practice.
Absolutely. And of course, if you're somebody who wants to play around with the stuff and then add these things to a library that you want to share with people, they'll bring that in and go, oh, I can't use that because my compiler doesn't implement that, but it's C#. So it's not that it's a problem. It's going to be, actually, it's a good problem to have. I'm just saying people have to be thoughtful about
that
sort
of
scenario.
Yeah, you have to be thoughtful. I mean, it's all Apache 2.0, right? So go at it. Have fun.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
Olaf wants to know, any evolution of Link coming up? We haven't talked yet, and my company would love it. So what's going on with Link++?
Well, depends on what you mean by Link. Link, the libraries, I don't think there are any evolutions that we're thinking of right now. Link-like language features, I kind of even in our talk this morning, I talked about some of the language features we're considering this time around almost as Link 2, in that they're sort of little declarative features, many of them, that help you get... Actually, I even demonstrated it with the query. You could now take things into a link query because you're doing it in an expression-based manner rather than in a statement-based imperative fashion.
Hmm.
And so it kind of boosts link and link style, sort of functional declarative programming a little bit more in the language. But that's as much as I'll
as much as you're going to say.
Yeah, that's
you'd love to talk about it, but you're not going to.
Right.
Right on, man. So
no.
Deadly Dog wants to know, is there any syntax to say this project requires Roslyn extension X to be installed in order to compile the project properly, sort of going back to that library thing? I'm worried about downloading somebody else's code, and it won't compile so they don't have the proper extension.
Okay. So Today, there's not a way to distribute a new compiler that plugs into Visual Studio and takes over everything, unless you're us, right? And so we're still kind of exploring that and deciding what that looks like. But today, that's a non-issue today. It might become an issue if we start to kind of go there. But right now, there's still just one product compiler, one set of APIs inside of Visual Studio. One of the key problems is you start allowing other compilers to get installed, and maybe they break some things, and Visual Studio is going to start taking dependencies on this thing. And then Visual Studio just falls apart, right? And so we want to be really careful with that and be really intentional about how that happens and what kind of sandboxing we allow there. Right now, what Anders showed was a sandbox for testing things out, the vision being you could test things out with your compiler changes in another hive of VS on your box. That's not something you can quite distribute that entire IDE experience like that. Instead, you can now take and you know, do a pull request, right, with your change and see if we can get into the main trunk of C# for VS. That's, we do expect people to install Roslyn extensions, and that's another piece. We just don't expect them to have a fresh compiler in them. They should use the one that's in Visual Studio. So it shouldn't be a concern.
Cool.
The extensions we've been showing are actually doing the opposite. They're not adding new things you can say, but they're letting people put up diagnostics and essentially discouraging or making errors, things that you could otherwise say in C#. So they're really putting guardrails up and making you follow certain patterns, and even offering code fixes that will do that for you.
Yeah, there are three key points for extensibility in Roslyn. In this release, that's the ability to add diagnostics in the compiler pipeline. So the compiler is going along, it's doing its analysis. It says, "Hey, I've found a named type symbol, right? Either class, enum, interface, struct, or delegate." It says, "Here, I'm going to put this in the symbol table. Oh, somebody's got a diagnostic analyzer that wants to analyze symbols. So I'll tell them about this, right?" Cool. And then they get an opportunity to do some extra analysis and add a diagnostic that the compiler would then report as part of its regular diagnostic process. And then at a higher layer, there's extensibility for adding code fixes that respond to diagnostics. So the quick fixes you see is little light bulbs and all that. And then refactorings as well in the IDE. So those are really the three key pieces of extensibility. It's not quite wide open yet, but that's where it's at right now.
Very, very super useful. OK, Olaf wants to know, when can I use Roslyn in production? Why not use the preview in production?
Well, it's not done yet, dude. And we don't trust it to keep all your code, you know, to the standard that you expect. We think we've done a good job.
We think we've done a good job.
But we're not at the level of quality assurance that we usually call an RTM and or a release candidate or something like that. So you just have to chill, and we'll get there.
Yeah. And another piece is that things may change dramatically, preview to preview, right? As we come out with additional, you know, Roslyn previews, you might see, like if you take a dependency on primary constructors today, you might see changes come and break your code. We kind of reserve the right to do that.
Because the preview is out, we will get feedback that will cause us to change one thing or another.
Yep. Mm.
That's how the whole thing works. So it's almost guaranteed not to remain in the shape that it has right now. if we don't just hold our hands over our ears and not listen.
Well, and part of what you're doing, right, is to get real-world feedback in the form of watch how people actually use it.
Yes, absolutely.
So Antonio wants to know, and I think you already answered this, will Roslyn one day become a standard C# compiler in Visual Studio?
Yes.
In the next version of
Visual Studio, it is the standard and only C# compiler and VB compiler in Visual Studio. That's the whole plan. The old compilers are going away. This is a completely compatible replacement. It's just much better.
Carl wants to know, when will Ryujit be ready for productivity?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are, these are language guys, man.
Sorry, we're not on the runtime.
They're different kinds of compilers.
Should have been
guys
online when Habib was here.
Yeah, I'm sure, you should have asked that question of another person, and that person would have said, I can't tell you yet, buddy.
So Tristan wants to know, now when Roslyn accelerates language evolution, can we accept new language features faster than VS releases?
Ooh, interesting.
It's possible, I guess, but I think, I mean, we've been releasing updates to VS at a pretty decent clip.
Sure.
I don't think we would do it outside of updates, but I even think we might not do it at updates. There's a certain value to having quite well-rounded sets of features, be branded with a new, you know, cardinal number in the chain of language versions.
Sure. And there may be new features in the IDE itself that are dependent upon new capabilities in Roslyn, right?
That too.
Yeah.
So, as a public person, please tell me why should I install Roslyn and use it in my everyday life? As a public person.
A public person?
So but think about it in terms of like public class, right?
Sure.
Public static.
Yes.
I don't know if that's what he means, but.
You should install Roslyn right now if you want to play with where C# and VB is going and want to hopefully give us some feedback on your experience with it and help us get it right for the time when it is actually a product.
If you're even if you aren't using new language features, I'd encourage you to just use it. The IDE experience especially, we've been dog-fooding it for a couple of years now, a few years actually on the IDE team, and it's good, in my opinion, but we don't code like everybody else. We don't code like all of you guys do. And so sometimes there are bugs in the corners of the language. We actually gave this to the MVPs earlier, in the last couple of months, several months, we gave them previews leading up to this, and they filed them almost 200 bugs,
wow.
Right? And a lot of them were on corner cases in IntelliSense where we didn't do the right thing, you know, and it was just stuff we hadn't found yet. And so, by getting this preview out there, we can ensure that we have a much higher quality when there's finally a Dev 14 preview coming for the next version of Visual Studio, right? Because this is, you know, this is not something to be taken lightly. We're taking out huge components and wholesale replacing them.
Sure.
We may need to make sure that they are as high a quality as possible, and I don't want to get to a stage that's later in Visual Studio when we might not have time to fix some of these edges, right? And I want to make sure that it's really good. So I would encourage you to install it, and just if you don't want to use the new language features, try out the IDE experiences.
Excellent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right on. So Heaven's Revenge wants to know, has the C# team ever looked at using LLVM as the code generator, emitter, or static analyzer instead of make an in-house solution?
somebody probably looked at it and decided no. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I wasn't in those meetings, apparently.
we were well along before LLVM really came.
Yeah, that's part of it,
yeah.
Sure.
So we had already been going for quite a while on it.
And we're super highly tuned in many ways. I don't actually know if there would be too much of an overhead or an architectural mismatch with how we do things, but I'm just speculating here.
Sure. Well, we had to get the LLVM question in at some point. I'm surprised it took so long.
That's over with now.
Great questions in general, Heavens. Johnny wants to know when will some more functional stuff come, like maybe MapReduce.
MapReduce as a first-class language feature? I don't know. There's Link. That's kind of there, but it's not as if we're not turning C# or VB into functional languages. We keep learning from functional languages, learning idioms and styles. As I said, the majority of the feature set that we're in the process of adding is sort of declarative oriented, which is a style that comes from functional programming.
Mm.
But it's still fundamentally not a functional language. It's not a functional first language like F#, for instance, says.
Sure.
It's an object-oriented first with increasing affinity with functional styles, I think. And we keep getting more and more of that, but we'll never pass that boundary and flip over and become functional, I think.
So Gordon's asking, are we able to compile from inside VS today, i.e., can we not implement Roslyn in our other custom builds? Just try it out.
Well, you can compile Roslyn with the Roslyn compiler pretty much. You can do it. Is that the question? Like, you can do it, batch or whichever way you want.
I think the question is, you install the end user preview. It's a Visual Studio extension.
Ah.
Does it work outside of Visual Studio? Actually, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
As soon as you install the extension, if you open up VS and open a C# or VB project, that causes our package to load, and it causes us to do some naughty things, where we stick some MS build targets a secret place, but that ultimately causes MS Build now to use the Roslyn compilers outside of VS as well. So if you go to the command line and use MS Build, it will use Roslyn at that point.
Yeah, so you have to just open it once.
Yep.
I think you have to open a project in it
once. You have to open a project, yes.
Open a project, then it does its magic the first time, and your command line too.
Excellent.
I feel a little dirty explaining that.
Yeah.
So Paul wants to know, what is the CPU performance of C# .NET native code versus similar C++ code? Have you benchmarked it? How large is the penalty?
Again, we are not the right people to speak to that. It's good.
Yeah. Well, we sort of talked about that a little bit in another session.
Okay, good.
And according to the .NET native folks, the performance is going to be very, very close. But people have to understand that even though it's C# native, it's C#. And it comes along with everything else that you get with C#, like guaranteed type safety and a garbage collector.
Right.
And you have a runtime that's involved in ensuring certain things. So it's kind of not really a fair comparison. At the end of the day, they're all native because it's running on silicon. But there's going to be some differences depending upon the workload. So it's not really that simple of a question. And we talked about it. The C++ people had a different take on that, which is more what I would just said. Because maybe I'm biased now. Because they were the second ones.
Yep.
So Alex wants to know, planned C# 6.0 features list includes exception filters and private protected. What's next? Fault handlers and mod rec?
No, none of those are on the list.
What are those?
I think what he's alluding to is that those two features, exception filters and private protected, are features that expose CLR features that haven't been exposed in C# before, that other languages may expose, but we didn't. And and it's not that we are on a tear to expose everything that's in the CLR. It's just that these kind of reached the level of usefulness where, they're already there, let's go and give them some syntax.
To be fair, Mads and the C# language design team have been resisting exception filters for years.
Yes.
And finally, there were just some cases that came up that was like, yes.
Okay, let's tell this insider story from the C# design
team.
Let's
do it.
When we were in the C# language design meeting talking about exception filters again, Anders essentially said, let's do whatever it takes to never have to discuss this again. And that turned out to be adding the feature.
I mean, what's so bad with exception filters, man? It's not a bad idea.
We have them in VB.
VB has them, F# has them. The slightly odd thing about them is that on the surface, they're syntax for a thing you can already do perfectly well. That you catch an exception, you look at it, decide somehow that, I didn't want to catch it, and then you throw it again. Right? That's how you do it in C#. The problem when you do that, catch and rethrow, is that your call stack disappears, the one that you came from. Whereas exception filters are specially supported in the CLR so that you can look at an exception that's flying by your catch clause, and sort of without catching it, you can see, am I interested in this or not?
And, you let it go.
And if you let it go, you haven't destroyed the stack. And so if you get to a fatal point later, you have this preserved stack from all the way where it originally came from. You get a better dump and so on.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. It also means you can write ridiculous things like catch this exception when the tick count on my machine is divisible by two.
Catch it on Sundays.
So.
So what sort of crazy fun language feature you'd like to see the community come up with? That's what Andrew wants to know.
I don't know if I have a specific request. I mean, if they're crazy fun, it sounds like the kind of feature that we're too conservative to probably take back in. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't enjoy seeing things like mix-ins or I don't know, what can we think of that is really crazy and different? I mean, play with it, it's fun. You kind of have to remember, if the community does it, it's not enough coming up with the syntax. You have to come up with the code gen for it too. Like, what comes out the other end that's useful CLR code?
Right.
What about non-nullable types?
I would love to have non-nullable types in the language. We have concluded, we're probably wrong, but we have concluded many times that there isn't a good design for non-nullable reference types that can be retrofitted onto the language, the CLR, the .NET libraries and so on.
Okay.
We've sort of, I mean, it's a fundamental thing in CLR languages and in C# that every type has a default value, for instance. And what is the default value of a non-nullable reference type? I don't know. It's kind of weird, right?
I. The imaginary number.
The imaginary number, yeah.
So
the imaginary value.
I understand. Yeah. So basically, you can't add something to the language and then break everything that's around it.
Right. And
so
yeah.
Olaf wants to know, will functions ever be first-class citizens in C#? Var A equals in A, whatever.
Not sure.
I think he's saying, can I do this without ever saying func?
So without ever applying a delegate type to it, I don't know. Visual Basic allows you to.
Visual Basic cons is up anonymous delegates out of the
It's not a really nice solution to it because you get a new delegate type every time.
Yeah.
And what would really be nice, again, if we could start over, we should probably have structural function types in the language that, you know, every lambda just has a type, a canonical type, and that's the way function types are expressed. Hmm. But that's a place where the language shows its age, right? Delegate types are unnecessarily nominal, and we just live with it the best way we can by providing some default generic ones. And
understood.
That's as good as it gets, I think, unfortunately.
Right on. So will you look into .NET Native for WPF in the future, or will it be a mobile exclusive? Again, another question for the wrong people, but it's fun. It's the end of the show.
It makes sense to do, but we have to start somewhere, and store apps are really the best place to start. That's where you get a lot of bang for the buck. Mobile is where you really want native because you're resource constrained.
Absolutely.
So will we look at doing it other places? Certainly. I mean, there might be, I'm just totally guessing here, but there might be a time where that's the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. The JIT goes away or something. I don't know.
But you'd have to figure out how to implement reflection and things like that in a statically compiled way.
Yep.
Yeah,
which are JITs are good sometimes.
We're here to solve deep problems, man.
I know you are. Right on. So Dustin,
that's what our job is. Yeah,
right on. So Darren wants to know: have you considered adding string interpolation? If someone me submitted a pull request for it, what are the odds it would be accepted?
Should we get this person to do free work for us?
There's a discussion about string interpolation right now out on the CodePlex site that Lucian Wyszyk started.
Right on.
Discussing some of the issues that we have to solve, some of the design issues we have to solve. We actually have concocted a syntax for it in C# and I think VB, but we're still thinking about the semantics of it. The main issue is culture. If you have string interpolation where you allow variables to occur inside of a string and be expanded to their value, do you do that in a current culture way, or do you do it in an invariant culture way? Hmm. In other words, are you primarily expanding your strings for human reading or for machine reading, right? That's a fundamental thing that we'd have to figure out.
Would there be a way to specify that?
But then you have more syntax. Where do you put that? And so
understood. Fair enough. Vic wants to know, currently proposed class parameters capture syntax looks a bit noisy to me comparing to F#. And get-only auto properties looks exactly the same as properties with expression bodies. I like the idea a lot. Don't you think so?
Don't I think so? The first or the second statement in there is the proposed class parameters look a bit noisy?
Yeah. So
capture syntax. Yeah. What he's asking about is where you can say private in front of a primary constructor parameter, and then you capture it into a field as well. Yes, that is noisy. And we decided to make it noisy rather than automatically capture, because otherwise it was too hard for people to know when they get fields automatically generated into the type. And that would actually lead to some really dangerous code where you accidentally capture the state twice in two different private variables. You know, maybe one of them is the backing field of an auto property, and the other one is captured from the parameter. And you have this type where the state is replicated, and if you mutate it, you mutate only the one, and it, you know, you just get
strange, funky
bugs around.
Maybe you could use an attribute like crazy fun.
Yeah, maybe.
So Zippy V wants to know, can I use Roslyn to create an app that generates code C# or VB?
Yes, absolutely, you can do that. That's a core scenario. We want people to be able to do code generation with Roslyn. And do high fidelity code generation in that in their language of choice there. So the APIs to look at, there's a set of APIs called generators, the generator code generation API, and that's for declaring kind of types and members and that sort of thing. And then there's also a very rich API for generating the syntax API. So there's this syntax API you can look at when you get a parse tree back, and there's a full representation of the language. There are factory methods for all those, so you can construct trees, and then there's APIs to format them like regular C# or VB formatting. And so then at the very end, you get source code that looks right. Sure. And so there's a bunch of APIs for doing that.
Excellent. So Heaven's Revenge wants to know, has Mavs mainly adopted the leadership of C# so that Anders can enjoy his freedom and life in the JS and TypeScript world?
Oh, that's the truth, man. No, not quite. The there's a bit of a timing thing here. Anders and I actually both went and worked on TypeScript. And then, because we took a break from C# after async, we were so exhausted, man.
I can imagine.
And TypeScript needed to happen. And we both went and worked on the design team for that. And then at some point, I went back and worked mainly on C#, and Anders stayed and worked mainly on TypeScript. And then we came to each other's design meetings and kind of both contributed to both languages, but with each in one camp. So that's kind of how it worked out. Anders is still a part of the C# design team, and he's still the leader. He's still the one at the end of the table who'll say, no, guys, we're not doing this. So no, I have not adopted the leadership.
Understood. So Harry wants to know, we use system.codedom.compiler to dynamically create an in-memory assembly, basically an eval function like in JavaScript. Will this namespace still be available in VS 2014, or do we need to switch to a new namespace for generating assemblies at runtime?
That namespace will still be available. It's part of the .NET framework that ships in Windows. It's not going away. And in fact, the old C# and VB compilers are still going to ship in Windows to support specifically this API. So you don't have to go to a new namespace. I would recommend going to a new namespace, however, and go to Roslyn, because that that API actually spins up another process with the compiler, the old compiler in it, to do its work. And instead, you could actually do it all in memory in your application just by referencing Roslyn and using those APIs to generate, to build up trees, to generate code, and build an in-memory assembly. You can actually just spit that in-memory assembly to a stream as well. So
nice.
It's pretty pretty handy for that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I can't read Carl Heinz's thing. It's something about the garbage collector in C#. And listen, I think we're all tired. It's been a long day.
Yes.
And I don't want to end the day on the garbage collector, man. So.
Well, the garbage collector comes in after.
Yeah, the garbage collector. Actually, it's coming.
Yeah.
So, hey, amazing for you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Charles.
Incredible week for .NET and C# and VB. Yeah. And C++ and everything that we're doing, Azure, you know, it's a wonderful time to be at Microsoft. And yeah. Really happy you guys have gone out as open as you have. So congratulations.
Thanks, Charles.
And thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the wonderful questions. Amazing.